For those of us who just joined the Bhagavatam classes here in Goloka Dham, it might be interesting to hear the context in which this verse appears in this part of the Bhagavatam. There are different locations in the universe which are described, and there are different characteristics are also mentioned. That means which personalities live there, how they are worshipped, and so on. And it does tell us a little bit of the different possibilities this universe offers. There are places within this universe where the different desires of the living entities can be perfectly satisfied. And we will hear now about sex.
Hare Krishna.
In Ketu Malavasha, Lord Kamadev Pradyumna moves very graciously. His mild smile is very beautiful. And when he increases the beauty of his face by slightly raising his eyebrows and glancing playfully, he pleases the goddess of fortune. Thus he enjoys his transcendental senses. This is a location where the Lord is present, and where those who are still in the universe but who are very spiritually minded seem to worship him, the Lord of Karma. Here's another verse. Accompanied during the daytime by the sons of the Prajapati, the predominating deities of the days, and accompanied at night by the daughters, the deities of the night, Lakshmi Devi worships the Lord during the period known as the Samvatsara, in his most merciful form as Kamadev. Fully absorbed in devotional service, she chants the following mantras. Here's the purport. The word maya mayam used in this verse should not be understood according to the interpretations of the Mayavadis. Maya means affection as well as illusion. When a mother deals with her child affectionately, she is called maya maya. In whatever form the Supreme Lord Vishnu appears, he is also affectionate towards his devotees. Thus the word mayamayam is used here to mean very affectionate towards the devotees. Srila Jiva Goswami writes in this regard that mayamayam can also mean kripa prachuram, deeply merciful. Similarly, Srila Veera Raghava says, when one is very affectionate due to an intimate relationship, one is described as maya maya. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains maya mayam by dividing it into the words maya and amayam. He explains these words to indicate that because the living entity is covered by the disease of illusion, the Lord is always eager to deliver his devotees from the clutches of maya and cure him of the disease caused by the illusory energy. So, Namam Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Shimakti Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti namine namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pacharine Nivashesha Shunyavadi Paskatyade Sataine Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shiva Sati Go Bhaktavindam. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. In this verse, we actually hear of a manifestation of Krishna in this world as the spiritual Kamadeva, the Lord of lust. We all know that it is very, very difficult to give up desires which are related to sense enjoyment. It's very, very difficult. The old Greek people, they said that every atom is pervaded with a desire to find a partner. It's a very interesting perspective. And therefore they say that, said that the human body, which is composed of such atoms, is pulsating with the intense eagerness for partnership, in which various types of satisfaction can occur. So the Lord, who's mayamayam, that means very, very merciful and highly interested in the deliverance of the living entity from the clutches of the material energy, appears in the form of the deity who's in charge of this material desire, or this constant pushing in the living entity to find gratification. And he comes as the spiritual Kamadev, the Lord of the lust. He is together with Lakshmi Devi, and he is constantly engaged in pleasing this goddess of fortune, and enjoys his transcendental senses in her company. So Lakshmi Devi worships this Lord, this Lord who's totally attractive, and by guiding us in this way, or in how to worship him, we can overcome our material disease of material gratification, and we can really enter into the experience of spiritual gratification, of spiritual happiness, of spiritual happiness. And she does this worship by a very powerful mantra, which I would like to chant with you. Om. Please sit properly. This for chanting mantra, concentration is necessary. Om Ram Ring Hum. Om Namo Bhagavate Hrishikeshaya. It's the beginning of a mantra where this Lord, the spiritual Lord of satisfaction, is worshipped as the only enjoyer who can be recognized through one's spiritual senses. Hare Krishna. In other words, our attention is brought to lust. I do not know if you also feel this emotion sometimes in the atoms of your body. Most properly. So by bringing this before Krishna, this feeling of obtaining satisfaction, it can be purified and we can be delivered. A very good example which Prabhupada gives in the Bhagavatam is the example of thirst. I believe every one of us here feels at different times thirst. Just like lust. Thirst is a natural inclination within the human body. It's nothing to be ashamed of. You know, thirst is, that does happen. It is happens like lust happens at different times. But still, you can, so normally these material, they are also described as waves which come into the psychology of the living entity, and just like waves cover it. Still, you can take these, the impetus or the strengths of these emotions, thirst and lust, and you can bring that to Krishna and purify it. For instance, the thirst, you drink water, but you drink water with a certain meditation on Krishna. Raso hung apsukonteya, you meditate. That this taste in the water is Krishna. And while you in this way pursue your thirst and drink, you have a Krishna conscious experience of quenching your thirst. You actually become enlightened by your drinking activities. In the same way, lust. If you have this impulse and it is very strong in you, then it is possible to bring that into a proper situation, that is, into a dharmic relationship, where in the course of following or acting within that relationship, you can be purified, and it is not, let us say, possible that you become more entangled in material life. Well, this is the principle of Krishna consciousness. Now, in this verse, a slightly different principle will be explained. The normal principle is you use the material energy and you see Krishna within it and get purified by this perception of Krishna. But here in this verse, another technique is given. The technique which is relevant for brahmacharis and sannyasis and devotees who do have a very spiritual inclination and no longer so many material desires. This is transcending this by absorbing all the senses in devotional service and chanting these mantras and then coming on the transcendental level. One may chant this mantra for complete liberation from material bondage. And after liberation, one may continue to chant it while worshipping the Supreme Lord in Vaikuntha Lokas. So, in devotional service, we have two opportunities. We can see the Lord in the material surroundings and in our engagement in this world, or we can go the path where we want to immediately act on a spiritual platform altogether. Which part is better? This question really doesn't arise in a traditional spiritual philosophy. Whatever level you are on, you will have to follow the guidelines for purification which are relevant for that particular level. Krishna explains to Uddhava that it's very necessary for every devotee to act on the level of his adhikar. Adhikar means something like competence. To act on another level, Krishna says, is impious. It's not good. Because you will be acting as a pretender that is not according to your level. You will have to pretend to be something you are not. And anyways, it doesn't work. You will be able to pretend for a certain amount of time, and then the powerful urges will stop us. Good. I wanted now to go into a subject matter which I'm very, very interested in, and I think you will also like it very much. I will talk on a general principle of spiritual life, that is, the inner person. Once, Satsvarup Maharaj wrote a poem which went something like this. O soul, who always lives in the temple of your body, be an inner person. A spiritual life really means to become an inner person, a person who understands that I'm here residing in the temple of the body together with the Lord, who's also here with me in the heart. This path of God realization or self realization, if you so want, is always different than the path of material life. A person who's on the inner road will obviously be a little different. In Montreal, once there was a cartoon in the newspaper which Prabhupada liked very much. There was an elderly woman talking to her husband. Chant, chant, chant. There were some devotees in the background, and she now wanted to motivate her old husband. They were like 70 years old. Chant, chant, chant. And her husband responded, can't. Can't. That is, chant, the chant without the H. Can't. That is the normal. Prabhupada liked this very much and laughed, because he said that this is the situation of an outer person who lives in the external world. He cannot find in his heart the determination to act in spiritual activities, which are like inner activities. He just can't do this. It is not possible. There is in Chaitanya's pastimes this fired up devotee, Gadadha. It's not Gadadha Pandit, it's another Gadadha. He worshipped a deity of Gopal at home, and he was totally inspired by this understanding of how merciful Lord Gauranga was. And therefore he decided to make everyone chant. So he went one day to the Muslim governor of the area. This person was very much feared in the Hindu community, because he would relentlessly torture and kill those brahmanas who would spread the Vedic teachings. It was described that no one even wanted to be in contact with the shadow of this man. So Gadadha decided to go to the house of this person and try to convince him to chant Hare Krishna. and he came in the midnight, you know, when this man was sleeping. The guards were totally startled, as the Wächter, because Gadadhar was so inspired and so enlightened and so enlivened. Gadadhar just said, "Where is the Muslim Qazi?" The guard said, "He's sleeping, please go away. It's a little late now, it's past midnight." "He shouldn't sleep at this time," said Gadadhar. And he went to the door of the Muslim Qazi, banged on it and said, "Hey Qazi, hey Qazi." So the Qazi, you know, who was known as a killer of brahmanas, somehow struggled out of bed, opened the door to see the disturbing element and found Gadadhar. "Chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna." So I can't explain it very nicely psychologically what went on in him, but you know, I think it's human nature, when something comes into our life which we absolutely do not expect, we react differently than we normally do. So the Qazi had not imagined that someone would come to him to try to bring him to Krishna consciousness. No one had ever tried that. And he had certainly not expected a devotee of Krishna to knock at his door at 12 o'clock in the night, which is not the time in which you would visit someone who's strange, you know. Even in Germany, which is totally Mletscher-like, after 10 o'clock you just don't phone anyone you don't know. You know, it's a bad behavior, bad etiquette. So the Qazi was totally thrown out of his normal reaction. He reacted and said, "Chant Hare Krishna Gadadhar. It's so late. I will chant tomorrow." So Gadadhar said, "You said it, you said it, you said Hare Krishna. Qazi, don't be a fool. Gauranga Mahaprabhu has appeared together with the Avaduta Nityananda, and they have spread love of Godhead to everyone in the universe, except for you. Start immediately to take the mercy of my Lord Gauranga." And then Gadadhar laughed and danced and went out of the house of the, or the, it was like a little palace of the Muslim Qazi, leaving everyone in a state of shock. Now, this is an example of what we mean with the Muslim Qazi is an example. He was a sensualist, he was an aggressive person, he was a governor, you know, a wealthy person, and he just couldn't imagine to chant, but by the mercy of Gadadhar, he did. In the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna describes the outer man. He says, "Bhogaishvaya prasaktanam taya parita chetasam vyavasayatmika buddhi samadho navidiyate." In the minds of those who are too attached to sense enjoyment and material opulence, and who are bewildered by such things. Mudha means bewildered. They can only think of sense enjoyment and how can I make money. In the minds of these outer people who live in the outer world, the resolute determination for devotional service to the Supreme Lord does not take place. It just does not take place. They cannot find in their heart this, "No, I will now serve the Supreme Lord. It's just not possible, because the mind is so much absorbed in these external things, which are there, that it's just not possible. Another symptom of the outer person, and I feel that's the person, that's something which can also happen in devotional service, is to think of friends and enemies all the time. Prahlad Maharaj says to his father, who was also an outer person, it's illusionary to see the world and divided in friends and enemies. If you want to think of an enemy, there's only one enemy, that's the uncontrolled mind, really. So, but the external person is always engaged, really, with things of the external world. It is sometimes said that spiritual movements have this as a challenge in, and with it also spiritual persons within the movement have this challenge, that when they start, when the movements start, then they are very, very much oriented towards spiritual life, and as it becomes more established, so to say, institutional concerns become very important, and establishing oneself in the world as a movement becomes very important, and they sometimes become more external. Christianity is such an example. The earlier Christians were different than the Christians today. And also the spiritual individuum who starts his spiritual journey is usually in the beginning overwhelmed or overcome with a great enthusiasm for spiritual things, which is so great that he separates from everything he used to do. And as he goes on in his spiritual life, the very thing which he seemed to want to leave behind came running behind him, and the spiritual person notices, oh my God, I guess I have something to do with this. I guess I have to sort things out. I'm not really able to act totally on the spiritual platform, and so on. The world which I wanted to give up has caught up with me again. This is a usual experience. It doesn't, it happens in all types of spiritual endeavors. And some devotees have told me it happened to them also in their spiritual lives. I don't know if you have ever noted such a thing in your life. In Christiane, monastic tradition, die klösterlichen Tradition des Christentums, the monk seems to be at constant warfare with his body and the material energy. It's not what a devotee in Krishna consciousness should be. Because he notices, I am a spiritual soul and I yearn for the loving embrace of God. But the body seems to sometimes want to go in the exact opposite direction. There's a conflict. It's not easy to be an inner person in a world which is dedicated to external values. And what makes it more difficult, it's not easy to be an inner person when you certainly have a body and the mind which is very, very much connected to this world. In fact, which is part of this world, which is made of the same elements with the same inclinations. So therefore, on the spiritual path, to become an inner person after the initial enthusiasm, the devotee has to negotiate his position Er muss seine Situation nochmal betrachten und er muss nochmal sehen, was jetzt ein praktischer Weg für ihn ist, mit diesem, sagen wir mal, Konflikt umzugehen. So, he has to see what is a practical. I read yesterday a good word in Lord Kapila said, speaking with his mother, what is a serviceable way to deal with this? Was ist also etwas, was funktioniert? Was, ja, funktioniert ist vielleicht das beste Wort. How, and certainly no one ever wants to always live in this warfare, means the interest of the body and the mind, which seem to sometimes not be in tune with spiritual life, and the desires of his soul, you know. I believe it requires a lot of maturity, of inner growth, to first of all be willing to confront this dilemma, which is there in all spiritual traditions, and certainly ours, the difference of interests, so to say, and then to do something mature about this, so that there is not a constant warfare going on within your heart, between the inner and the outer person. This requires a tremendous amount of maturity and a deep understanding of the tools which the Bhakti tradition offers to escape this dilemma. I believe that the Bhakti tradition is that tradition which really can offer us a way out, whereas I do know in Christianity this dilemma was for a long time there, and then Christians just said it's enough, and they surrendered to the material urges more than to their spiritual urges. This happens also, has happened in the Krishna consciousness movement. It has happened most probably also to all of us at various stages of our spiritual journey, that we said, oh Krishna, this warfare is too harsh for me. Let's face the thing. I just do it, you know, whatever I want to do, and I, we could write a book, The Secret Life of the Hare Krishnas. There is such a life which we don't. And then sometimes the devotees thought, I don't want that this is a secret life. I don't want to feel guilty any longer. And then they make it more or less open. Or they just go a little bit in the distance of different spiritual activities. So in Krishna consciousness, it's very important to make a resolution, a strict resolution, that I want to be an inner person. I don't want to live as an outer person in the false self. The false self, as we all know, is a fragile, insecure, needy person. The outer person is formed in mental time and changes or dies very easily. The outer person is often whimsical and only wants self-maintenance of material desires. That's a very external person. The inner person often lives in this conflict with the outer person, and then it will solve this conflict by telling the outer person, well, why don't you, you shouldn't be so bad as you want to be. Let us engage you in some sensible way, which is good for you, which will purify you gradually, and so on. Now in Krishna consciousness, and this is what, why I'm so absolutely enthusiastic personally about Krishna consciousness, is that you can have an inner life and it doesn't need to be very dramatic. It can just mean to have a prayer a day to Krishna, to chant your rounds, whatever the amount is which you have committed yourself to chant that, and to worship the Lord, and then go about in your life, in your various occupations and your various things which do hold an interest for you, which you slowly dedicate to your spiritual journey. It is possible to live like this. But to live an inner life, you need to be sure, or to make progress in an inner life, you need to be absolutely sure that you do something which is absolutely spiritual each day, so that you can be purified. And this inner life is variegated. Also es gibt viele Möglichkeiten. We find, for instance, the process of Shravanam, hearing about Krishna. And there's one devotee who just dedicated his whole life. He made his focus, so to say, in life, Shravanam. It was Parikshit Maharaj who received a notice of death and then went to the Ganga and just heard for 7 days the wonderful narration of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is one way of leading an inner life. You just hear the scriptures, and then you will see how the Lord slowly, slowly, slowly begins to manifest on the lotus of your heart. The only thing you have to make sure is that you do this nityam. Nityam means regularly. This hearing, which brings about a manifestation of Krishna in the heart, must be done regularly. That's very important. You should not have too many pauses in your hearing if you want to have this experience of inner life. Or an experience of inner life is what Sugadev did, that is talking about Krishna, kirtanam. Those who are preachers of us, they know, I can tell you from my own experience, I'm, you know, with the exception of 1 month a year, where I'm just dedicating myself to Shravanam, to hearing in its different forms, I'm usually in the Kirtanam group. I preach, I recite shlokas, verses, and so on. Very imperfectly, I know, but I'm trying to make a spiritual impression in people's mind. We follow the path of Sugadev, so to say, Kirtanam, praising Krishna, praising devotion, service to Krishna. Sometimes preachers are not liked in the society of men because they remind us of something which we like to forget, really. Preachers, especially who are not so expert in creating a higher taste, are really hated in society. We say, "Don't preach to me." In our times, the preacher is not seen as a very, very thing. Because often they say preaching is an external activity, but as someone who has dedicated his life to this service, I must disagree and say no. When you preach, it's really a very internal activity. What you do when you want to preach is you share what is in your heart, the little realizations which you may have with the world. It's a It's a highly sensitive activity. It's a very, yeah, you bring what is within to the world, really. And I agree, because we live in Kali Yuga, it's a thankless world, and they react sometimes not in a very kind way. But for the preacher, when he is meeting with defeat, he says, "My Lord, this is how I wish to serve you. This is how I can serve you. This is how my spiritual master has engaged me. Please kindly allow me to find some open ears in this world, in these difficult times." It's a very internal thing, really, which a preacher feels. It's an inner life. And you can, I think, all of you are preachers to some degrees. When you talk to your neighbors, you talk to give lectures, some of you give lectures, and you know how you feel when you are able to glorify the Lord of your heart, and you feel how grateful you are when you find a receptive audience who wants to hear. You feel like, now this is really private and intimate and internal thing. Internal life can also mean, like Prahlad. Prahlad is known for what? Smaranam, yes, remembering Krishna. Prahlad Maharaj was so fixed up in his memory, in the nectar of devotion, it's described he sometimes would lay for long times on the temple floor, just remember Krishna. Or he would sit, when I believe, was it Lord Shiva who visited him? Yes, he saw him under a tree, the son of the king of the demons, where was meditating with a blissful smile on his face on Krishna. Smaranam. So he was a total inner person who had a conflict with Hiranyakashipu. You know, Hiranyakashipu did everything in the world to kill him, and this was a really intense conflict. And do you know, Prahlad remained so fixed in Smaranam? I don't know if I told this to you, Nita Gunamani, already. He did not really feel that Hiranyakashipu was angry at him. He thought, he's my father. He must be joking. You know, when Hiranyakashipu threw him down the cliff, "Oh, my father must be joking." He fell down the cliff. Krishna, Krishna. It was so much steeped in remembrance. I mean, it's an ideal which we can, you know, very humbly adore, and maybe, you know, follow in our own little insignificant ways. But he was not disturbed. And then when Krishna caught him in the air, in mid-air, als Krishna ihn inmitten der Luft dann auffing, he thought this is the most natural thing in the world. He was fixed in Smaranam. That was his inner life. Maharaj Prithu was fixed in Archanam, in worshipping the deity. See, bhakti engages Krishna and engages the outer person, and then brings about an internal realization. Those of you who have done deity worship, Archanam, know that it's really not an external activity. Yes, your body may use the camphor lamp and the ghee lamp and the thing, but your mind is with Krishna. It is there with fixed on the lotus feet of Krishna. I believe as a community, it's very important for us to try to understand the pujaris who may be so different in their life style than we are. They really have an inner experience with Krishna, worshipping Krishna. And that's why for them it's sometimes so difficult to imagine to give Krishna less worship than they're used to give him. Sometimes we don't have enough pujaris. It's almost like for you maybe when you receive the dearest guest, and you know he likes pizza, but you just can't cook pizza because that you don't have money, you don't have your oven doesn't work any longer, and then you have to imagine to give your guest something from yesterday. It will not work for you. You will somehow run. Because for you to receive the guest is an inner experience of friendship, and for you to and you want to give the guest his food, you know, somehow you cook in the neighbor house his pizza, or whatever. So archanam, this is what inner persons do in bhakti yoga. Or Maharaj Preetu was someone like this. He was so wealthy. Can you imagine a Vedic king like Preetu? He owned the whole planet. But he would make a first class deity worship. Do you know another great king who worshipped Lord Krishna with Archana? Ambarish Maharaj. We will come back to him a little later. And then there is the process of offering prayers. The example of this is Akrura. Akrura went to Vrindavan, as you all know. He had the order to bring Krishna out of Vrindavan into the wrestling arena where Krishna was supposed to be killed by the demons Chandura and Mushtika. But he was a great devotee. So he did, he followed his Ekadasi Vrata in Mathura, and the next morning he went in a brand new chariot to Vrindavan. And all this time which he was driving, he was absorbed in deep prayer. First, when he started, he thought, I'm happy, I have a new golden chariot, because Kamsa has not sat with his dirty behind on this chariot where I will drive my Lord Sri Krishna. This was his thought. He was still a little with Kamsa, and this demon had sent me to get Krishna, to ultimately kill Krishna. But then he thought in his mind, I will see Krishna. And when he finally saw something of Krishna, he jumped off from his chariot and offered prayers. What did he see? He saw the footprints of Krishna in the wonderful dust of Vrindavan. Oh, my dear devotees, we have gone Bhurijam Prabhu Jagatarini under the able guidance of Gaurahari to, what was this village called? Rangoli? Rakoli. Yes, we went from Davaro, from Rakoli. And this dust which was there, like powdered sugar, it was a little white, you know, little in the direction, I mean, on the side of whiteness. Not this white, but almost as white. Oh, Krishna, I will never forget this dust. There were some footprints of dogs in the dust, and then some cow footprints. Then there were some barefooted Brijvasi footprints, and so on. And I was thinking at that moment, as we were passing, what if I would be Akrura? Then I would see the footprints of Lord Krishna in this dust of Vrindavan. I thought for a moment like this, and then I thought, oh, careful, I shouldn't become a sajiya. So this Akrura, when he saw the footprints of Krishna, he actually saw them. He jumped out of his chariot on his nose and offered prayers. And then in this way they are serving the lotus feet in Dasya, and they are different devotees. So what I wanted to say with this is, if you want to be an inner person, you can, like Ambarisha Maharaj did, sometimes do Shravanam, sometimes when you feel Kirtanam is better for you, do Kirtanam. If you want to be an inner life, do Smaranam. Remember Krishna, sit down, remember something you have heard, or Archanam, or Vandanam, or Padasevanam, or do some heavy service, you know, making firewood for Krishna, and so on. And in this way, you can actually be an inner person by this is what I would like to say, overcoming this dilemma of the inner person and the outer person. You can just use the outer person in these devotional services, and then you will awaken the inner man in you, or the inner woman in you. Isn't that wonderful? Let me make it a little clearer. The Bhagavad Gita, we had yesterday Gita Jayanti. The Bhagavad Gita is seen in literature something like the New Testament of Indian spirituality. Do you know what is the Old Testament and what is the New Testament? Do you know the difference? Old Testament is more in, you know, pleasing God according to the commandments which he has given, you know, to follow this, you know. And the New Testament is more about mercy, Jesus and such things. Huh? It's not so much dependent on you. Now, in the Indian spirituality, there is also an Old Testament and a New Testament. The Old Testament was, if you want to be a spiritual person, if you want to be an inner person, you have to leave everything behind, meditate, practice ascetism, asketentum, sense control, mind control. The modern Kali Yuga man goes, and the modern devotee goes, there's nothing for me. And so on. Otherwise, no chance for you. The Bhagavad Gita says, you can do your duties and do them for Krishna. And then you're practicing yoga, karma yoga, or jnana yoga. You know, you can be an intellectual, but study the scriptures and, you know, in other words, use your inclination, use what you want in connection with Krishna. And the bhakti movement is really doing that. It tells us how to be an inner person by using our ears, our senses, our creativity, maybe addressing the Lord, in this way awaken the outer person. That is a very nice person. So I wish you lots of inspirations how you will awaken the inner person in you and live out an inner life. It's so disturbing for a devotee if he just is only reacting to his to the material needs which he has to fulfill if he is in this life. And there's never an end to the material need. The material energy or material life in this world will never give you a peaceful moment. It's always this, or you have fulfilled this desire or that desire. So therefore, please practice this wonderful Krishna conscious process. I'm looking for a verse which I want to say in the end to you. which I know you will like anything. And in this way, become an inner person. Fix your life in such a way that there is increasing amount of time for your direct contact with Krishna. In Deutsch gesagt, richte dein Leben so ein, dass du immer mehr Zeit gewinnst, dich auf Krishna und hingebungsvollen Dienst zu konzentrieren. Ja? Wenn man's intelligent, mind, faith and refuge are all fixed in the Supreme, then one becomes fully cleansed of misgivings through complete knowledge and thus proceeds straight on the path of liberation. Das müssen wir jetzt in Deutsch auch noch haben. Wenn die eigene Intelligenz, der Geist, das Vertrauen und auch die Zuflucht fest auf den Höchsten gerichtet sind, kann man von inneren Problemen befreit werden, weil man völliges Wissen hat, und vor allen Dingen, weil man geradewegs auf dem Weg der Befreiung ist. Hare Krishna. I'm personally very much enthusiastic. I'm back in Germany. I can't believe it as of yet. And I can't believe that I'm not crying in anguish. When we left Vrindavan, oh, we were so sad. We were so sad. You can't believe how sad we were. After 1 month, Vrindavan is in your mind and in your thoughts and in your heart. And then, but the devotees told me, don't worry, Sachinandan Swami. When you are in Delhi, you will not look any longer in what you have lost. You will look at what you can do in your service of preaching. And it was right. We came to Delhi and the devotees so kindly arranged a full auditorium. And so while we were there, we felt the creative juices run through us and we started preaching. And then, yes, when we came to Germany, we are now here to establish the next year, to make some arrangements, to write some articles and discuss this and that, to receive a MasterCard. I have heard Guru Bhavani is arranging with her mystical potency some new thing, which we have to learn what it is. Yes, so I hope I can serve you. I hope you still accept me. I'm very well aware that I'm sometimes disturbing you in your life with some of my statements. I will continue to work on them so that I can only give pleasure to your hearts. Hare Krishna. So let us see now if you have some questions.
Was hat dir gefallen? Du siehst alles.
Inner life in Krishna consciousness. Do you sometimes think about this subject? I must admit, when I'm preaching, a time comes where I see that I again forgot about the inner dimension of preaching. I get so caught up in the external arrangements of preaching, you know, just coming to the place where we need to come, you know, then dealing with disappointments because I still feel so enthusiastic for Krishna consciousness, I want to share it with everyone, but sometimes your own people don't want to hear it, and that's friendly fire, they call it, which gets any person down on his knees. So then I forget this inner dimension, and then I become full of anxieties and so on. But the moment I can get the twist again, so wie ich die Kehrtwende kriege, and return to the point that I connect all my activities really with my soul's desire to serve Krishna and give it as a loving offering to Guru and Krishna, then I feel just very protected and very happy, because one has changed the platform. And I believe in our lives, you know, every one of us has similar issues, that he can become pulled out, so to say, of the inner dimension of Krishna consciousness in the hectic lives, and then just lose it, so to say, and become overwhelmed by the mode of passion and tamagun and so on. So please think about what it could mean for you to become a more inner person in Krishna consciousness, to revive that self, that sense of shelter, to connect your intelligence and mind with Krishna through the different processes of devotional service, which are mentioned. Mm-hmm. Good. So let me see if some questions are here. Ananga Manjari is there, and Gaurabhavni is there. Okay. Ananga Manjari, what is your, could you please say? There are many, many tips and advices which one could give how to really deeply uproot these anattas which are with us. Because I had a little psychological background, really little, and have remained interested in it. I've explored it, but really my deep conviction is, instead of thinking so much how to deal with these material attachments and so on, and it is more important to just put Krishna in our lives, Ananga Manjari. When we put Krishna in our lives, and we consciously make space for Krishna, it sometimes means we consciously have to make space for Krishna in our lives, then Krishna is there in the heart, and then where Lord Krishna is, when Lord Krishna is present, the darkness of ignorance from which all these things come, you know, ultimately, Rupa Goswami says, from the darkness of ignorance, these material attachments come. They are not there anymore. This ignorance is not there. In other words, by putting Krishna in our heart, by making space for Krishna in our heart, we disempower the darkness of material life and the ignorance. In German, wie sagt man, wenn wir Krishna ins Herz tun, dann zieht man Maya den Boden unter den Füßen weg. She has no locus standi. She can't stand any longer. So that is much more helpful, especially for a person like you, that is a mother of a wonderful child and husband and being engaged to live a Krishna conscious Grihastha life. It's good if you consciously make space for Krishna in your heart, and then these things will go there, no longer present there. Whenever we have no space for Krishna in our lives, then the darkness of avidya comes, and with it the material desires and all these things. So you should become a spiritual architect in your life who creates a space where Krishna can appear. This is my recommendation. And then, yes. By Krishna's presence in the heart, as much as we can be with him, you know, and as much as we can give attention to him, these things will go away. Maybe you will have this body and the mind. It will look outwardly to be the same body and mind, but you have a different relationship to this. I have spoken with older godbrothers. They remember the times in which they joined. I mean, the music they heard, the literature they read, the what else? The culture in which they lived. They remember this, but they react differently towards it now than they did before, and in this way they feel a transformation has happened in the life. So the art is to create as much space for Krishna, and Krishna is like the sun, he will take care of it. This ignorance. Hare Krishna. Goha Bhavani, was ist deine Frage?
Maybe you could explain in more detail how it is connected also to your to mercy, that you can actually get the mercy to have the willpower.
Yeah. How can we bring ourselves maturely to will the things which are our ideals? Maybe it's something how free am I to really bring my willpower to this? You have a very, very nice point here. The living entity may have one desire, but at the same time he may lack the willpower to act upon the desire. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes very beautifully. He says how a devotee feels who knows and he wants also to become Krishna conscious, but he cannot bring himself to control his senses. And then the devotee will feel in his heart like this: am I not like a drunkard who knows that drinking kills him, but who as soon as the alcohol is there cannot stop drinking and afterwards curses himself for having drunk again? Am I not like such a person? Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur asked this question. I will give you an answer which is totally, which touches upon what Krishna says. He says it's very difficult to control the senses, and the mind is the inner sense, but by experiencing a higher taste, it can be done. So Krishna consciousness is, in my understanding, not so much a point, Krishna conscious advancement is not so much dependent on the willpower, on the determination, on the endeavor, as it is dependent on mercy of Krishna. The mercy of Krishna is given to a devotee who is humble and who endeavors as much as possible. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he speaks about this, that when a devotee who chants and he does not feel Krishna's presence, you know, he will feel, oh, it must be because of offenses, and I'm such a beginner in my spiritual life that the Lord doesn't come to me because of my offensive attitudes which I still have. And then Krishna, seeing this humility of the devotee, he gives him devotion which is full of power and brilliance. And this devotion then, which is born amazingly out of the humble recognition, I'm faulty, I make mistake, that attracts the mercy of Lord Krishna. But sometimes when Krishna is not present in the life of a devotee, he cannot be, he thinks it's because of this or that, and the my karma, my mind, this, but he cannot bring himself to a humble assessment of his fallen state, and he just turns around to the material energy instead of being just humble and saying, my Lord, I'm so fallen, and then attracting Krishna in the to him by his sincere humility and the devotion which comes out of this. The main point which I would like to say is our willpower is, if we are not very, very highly advanced people, is very weak. Especially in this age, Gaura Bhavani, the determination and the willpower is for a spiritual life is just not so strong as it used to be. We have all a karmic library. You know, if we would look in our karmic library, what we did just a few years ago in another body, we might be surprised. Of course, we are still influenced to some degree by this library, which we carry wherever we go. So, we should ask ourselves more, how can I attract the powerful mercy of the Lord? And this humility of seeing oneself failing and then concluding, oh, it must be because I'm very weak, you know. This alone will attract Lord Krishna to bestow some devotion in our heart, and then when there's devotion, then Krishna is very quickly attracted. That's one aspect. And the other aspect is to become attracted to Krishna. I really feel we should allow more space in our lives to become attracted to Krishna. The example which I heard this time from, you know, I like to discuss with many devotees of Krishna, and in India, I said to one devotee, how you're always so blissful and so much in Krishna consciousness, what is your secret? And he said, very simple, Maharaj, I associate with devotees who have taste in Krishna consciousness, and by seeing them relishing Krishna consciousness, I also feel attracted. It's almost like when you see someone eating a rasgulla and going like, wow, then you say, oh, now I also want to try it. Isn't it? That's very natural. I think in our culture, in your background, when we saw as young people how the musicians enjoyed playing the music, you know, and this was Twist, Elvis Presley, and we saw him, you know, when I saw my first movie of Elvis Presley, dancing and smiling and being woo-hoo, I thought, I will also become like this one day. It's very natural when you see someone enjoying something, you feel just, let me also do this, you know. In unserem Arbeitersprache, bist du aber gut drauf, kannst du mir dein Geheimnis verraten. So, this is how we deal in this world, we simple people, you know. So this association of people who eat the rasagula of Krishna consciousness and who seem to enjoy it is very helpful that we also become attracted. I'm discussing this with one of the leading figures in the yoga scene in America, Eddie Stern. I'm saying, you yoga people only know about the pushing power. You push yourself to do these amazing asanas, but you do not know anything of the pulling power. And that's why in America now, the kirtan becomes just so much. It's a modern thing now. Everyone is into kirtan nowadays because they know that by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, they feel pulled. They experience this, these yogic people. We did one kirtan, Gaura Bhavani, in the Ananda Ashram. That's a yoga ashram where Prabhupada used to go and visit Mishra. And the organizer of this ashram just cried during the kirtan. And I was thinking, because she was sneezing her nose all the time. And the eyes, I gave her a tempo, you know, while I was doing singing. And then she cried more. Afterwards, she came to me and said, I had no nose problem. And I was crying. Why? I said, well, because I have seen we all who are so crazy after yoga and mind control and, you know, leading a healthy, emotionally fulfilling life. We have no knowledge of what you do this kirtan. Come here and make kirtan retreats, please. It's really, we need to give ourselves the space to feel attracted to Krishna. And here comes now my controversial statement. Run to Vrindavan, Gaura Bhavani. Run to Vrindavan. Sit in Vrindavan under the shade of a kalpa vriksha tree, of the trees, you know. And just you will forget about everything else, and you will just you will not be able to believe it. It's just so, the Vrindavan has this attractive potency. Especially if you go to the loudspeaker zone, loudspeaker free zones, you know. But after Kartik, many places are there. For instance, when you know, I've discovered the ultimate place. I can give it, give the place to you. There's a place in the Yamuna. You sit this much away from the Yamuna, and the Yamuna comes flowing down. And you just sit there. I mean, I always chant, but if you want to just sit there, then you just sit there and let the atmosphere of Vrindavan come into your heart. Prabhupada writes this about this nectar of devotion, that anyone who comes to this magic place, to this place actually, he comes to the Yamuna, he will immediately feel his attraction to Krishna. Be born, even a materialistic person. It will come. Don't stay too long away from Vrindavan, please. It's not good. When you have visited many times, when you have visited Vrindavan or stayed there for some time, then you can go in your mind always, because you remember what you have seen. But either it's a very high state in Krishna consciousness, or it is a state which comes to someone who visited frequently. You know, he may not be very advanced, but he will just remember what he was. So in other words, in my answer to you about bringing up, or being sometimes unable to bring up the right determination and willpower, I'm answering in a very brief way. Think more about becoming attracted to Krishna in your, you know, how you work. This happens by good association. And, you know yourself by now. You're an older devotee, and you know what works for you. And don't underestimate the power of Vrindavan, please. Of course I say like this because I just come from there and it worked so much. Oh, Krishna. Krishna. This is my little answer. Willpower. Oh. Of course, there are things which help the willpower to grow. For instance, if you have a sattvic lifestyle, you can be more determined, you can fix your mind, than if you have a passionate and ignorant life where you are fickle-minded and overwhelmed often by desires and frustrations and so on. There are many, many things about how to increase willpower in our tradition, but at another time, if you wish, I could think more about it and go deep in this area, this, so to say, spiritual self-help. But here I would like to really mention more the essential point of controlling, getting a hold of your life. Allow yourself to become attracted to Krishna. Sometimes we are afraid of that, we human beings. To become more attracted to Krishna. What if I... And so we are afraid of it. But Krishna has his way to show us that this really is our only way to go. He makes usually life so intolerable for us that we just don't want to go any other way. That this is Krishna's way. You know, he throws some... I'm a little over time, I'm very sorry. I will end with something where I thought about your question. This is my end. And I was chanting in Vrindavan, and sometimes reading, and then continuing to chant. And all of a sudden I heard just next to me, what? Then I looked and I saw there was a farmer who was trying to speak to his water buffaloes. The water buffaloes had been brought into a pond, ein Teich, you know, for cooling down, and he was now trying to bring them out because there were other things to do for a water buffalo, like being milked and other such things, but they didn't want to come. So after the farmer had tried to speak to them, he first started to take some rods or some clumps of earth, Erdklumpen, and threw them on the water buffalo. Water buffalo didn't care. It was 2 o'clock, you know, the very hot time, and you know he didn't. Then he took sticks and threw sticks. Hare Krishna. I was chanting and looking at this. Then he started to take small stones and the bigger stones, and finally the water buffalo went out of the water hole. And I know Krishna does this also with devotees. He first gives some signs here, and then the bigger things that are to happen, maybe we see in our relationships some disagreements are there which are difficult, or just we are totally frustrated with our environment. So Krishna just has his way to move his devotees. He says, those whom I especially like, I take. Whom I really like and take care. Krishna says, I'm taking away things from them so that they will understand. I only have Krishna to go to. Hare Krishna, the last 5 years I got so many stones, you can't believe it. And now I'm finally ready to move. It took 5 years for me. I'm worse than any water buffalo in the world. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sisi Gaunitai ki jai, Gaura Premanandi Hari Hari Bol.